Welcome to the Grave and Open Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am Paola and I am an alcoholic. I'll be your host for the month of March. And this is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not aligned with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. You can enjoy the Grave and Open meeting every Wednesday at noon Eastern time on this virtual platform. The meeting will be recorded and will be posted as an audio podcast every Friday on all podcast platforms on agraven.org and on YouTube. This is an open meeting. Everyone is welcome. We're glad you're all here, especially newcomers. If you're new to AA and want to learn more about our program of recovery from alcoholism, we encourage you to find an AA group in your area. Contact with group members will help you to find a sponsor and help you learn about the AA program of recovery from alcoholism. Today's Grave and Daily quote, I'm going to read that now. Alcohol in Latin is spiritus, and you use the same word for the highest religious experience as well as for the most depraving poison. The helpful formula, therefore, is spiritus contra spiritum, from the language of the heart. You can sign up to receive the daily quote as a daily email at agraven.org, or you will find it on the Graven app every morning. This month, the Graven magazine is highlighting AA and the family. And this is an excerpt from the story, Family Storm. When I got to step 9, I made amends to my parents for all the things I've done that had hurt them over the years. For the first time in my life, I told my parents I loved them. After that, I continued to make living amends by doing my best to be a better and more loving son. One afternoon, I went on a walk with one of my sisters, and we made our amends to each other. The healing began to take place. And let's start today with a reading from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is from Chapter 7, Working with Others. Both you and the new men must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will be presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. This is a two-speaker meeting. There will be no sharing by attendees, so please sit back, relax, and listen. I love open meetings because there's no pressure. We often hear it's best to try and identify with the speakers rather than compare your story with theirs. And today, our speaker, our first guest, is a dear friend of mine, more than that, Lisa Kay. She's someone who lives in service. I've seen her, the way she shows up again and again. And Lisa, not just with words, with commitment, with so much love and dedication. And if you know her, you already know that she's not definitely a glam lot, not at all. Lisa, thank you for your example, your big heart, and for being here.
Welcome. Thank you, Paola. Thank you. I love you so much. And I really am. As much as I get nervous to tell my story, I'm so grateful that you asked me. I feel very honored, especially because I've been listening this month and really have enjoyed the speakers that that I've been able to hear. And I feel very honored to be in the presence of such people. I know we are all just a bunch of bozos on the bus, but I strive to be like, there are some people that I just really want what they have. And you've had some great speakers. So thank you for asking me. So anyway, my name's Lisa. I'm an alcoholic. And I my sobriety date is April 8th of 2012. So I'm coming up on 14 years. What? I'm so excited about that. And I love my sobriety because, you know, I'm awake for my life today. I was just existing for a really, really long time. And today I'm awake and I'm alive and I have a freedom that has been given to me from God and Alcoholics Anonymous that I did not have before. And, you know, it started off with, of course, a childhood I had. My parents they loved me so much and they did the best they could for me and with me. I was spoiled rotten. A lot of that came from, I believe, they were having difficulties as a married couple. And so I think my dad tried to make up for that in things. You know, he bought me a lot of stuff, took me a lot of places, da 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 da. And so just fast forward, 13 years old is when I first drank on purpose. Like I had alcohol before on maybe like a watered down champagne on New Year's my parents would give me, or but on purpose I drank at 13, and I drank four Bartles and James wine coolers with my friend Lisa. My best friend Lisa at the time, and we called ourselves Lisa and the Cult Jam. And we drank all four of those wine coolers each, and then, you know, got completely drunk and, you know, achieved the goal that we were trying to achieve. And it was just on from there, because finally, gosh, I can't even believe at 13 years old, I would need to relax and be able to just breathe. But that was the case. You know, the longer I stay sober, the more I see that. And the more I hear other people share that experience, you know, I know I just needed some sort of respite from the stressors of every day. And I'm sure some of it was my perception and some of it was probably real. But, you know, immediately I was shutting myself off from the sunlight of the spirit with my drinking, because I wanted nothing other than to change the way that I felt all the time. You know, from there on, that's what I wanted to do. And whatever that looked like, you know. And so, of course, I chose people that drank like I did, you know. And I went to a school where we had opportunities to have parties at, you know, parents' houses when they were gone and stuff like that. And so that was a big part of, you know, my high school years. And I loved it. I mean, I had a great time, but, you know, from the beginning, I remember blacking out. I blacked out a majority of the time when I drank. And so it just, I don't know why I thought that was so fun, but, you know, waking up the next day and people telling you what you did or didn't do and stuff like that, it's like, oh, ha, 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 that's so funny. Well, you know, it was so funny until it was not funny. And that was later in my drinking, of course. But, you know, I did begin to have consequences. At age 19, I got my first DUI. And I was, you know, obviously underage. My dad and I went to court together and paid the $500 fine. That's what it was. $500 and, you know, a little slap on the wrist. And there I go. And so I didn't really, you know, what am I going to learn from that? First of all, everything's paid for me anyway by my parents. And so that really didn't do anything for me. Like, I'm not in any trouble. Nothing's happening. Ain't it grand? The wind stopped blowing. So, you know, I'll just fast forward through this part because it's really simple. I have seven DUIs. And so at age 40 was when I got DUI number seven. I know that's hard to believe because I'm, you know, obviously only 28, but, so at 40, I got DUI number seven. And let me tell you, you want to talk about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. You know, 40 years old, I was married. I still am married. Married, had two kids, still have two kids. But, you know, mom and wife, DUI number seven, faced with all these, you know, consistent consequences. You know, I was in work release, jail, house arrest, many hours of community service. I even had to pay for community service to pick up trash on the side of the road. All these things that just didn't opened my eyes to the possibility that maybe there was a problem with my drinking. You know, I always thought it was, I was a good blame shifter. I was a good blame shifter and peace stealer. And so, you know, it's not my fault. I wouldn't have done it if. It's not my fault. The cops hate me. It's not my fault. Of course, they're pulling me over because, you know, I have these other DUIs. So they're just out to get me. You know, it couldn't have been because I was a drunk woman behind the wheel of a car, you know, a loaded weapon, essentially. You know, I took no responsibility for that, which, of course, I do now. But so obviously that was a pretty low point. DUI number 7, my husband and I were headed toward a divorce. My kids were scared. They didn't know what was going on day to day because mom was, you know, like a ticking time bomb because I hated myself. You know, at that point in time, I had gotten to a point of, I just didn't want to be around me. You know, you hear people say I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And that's exactly what I was. And I'll never forget that feeling. And I'm grateful for that because it's really a good contrast to what my life is like today. My life is so good. It's so full of love, so full of joy. And I have a choice every single day. You know, I have the opportunity to head toward a drink or away from God or away from a drink and closer to God. You know, I have an opportunity every single day to make that choice. And today, so far, every day, I keep choosing toward God and away from a drink. So I had to concede to my inner myself that I was an alcoholic. You know, for anything to change in my life, I have to think a different way. My perception has to change. I have to have that psychic change, as a matter of fact. You know, I have to become a whole new me and not think like I used to think, and at least bounce it off other people who think better than I do or can in a situation. And so I conceded to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic, and I walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous after meeting with a friend of mine who told me to fix the woman and the world will fall into place. And I didn't quite know what that meant, but I knew that that sounded good. You know, I didn't know how long that would take, but that's what I wanted. You know, I wanted to be fixed. I wanted my life to no longer look like consequences and scaring my children and upsetting everybody who loved me. You know, I didn't want that anymore. I had finally gotten to that turning point. You know, I had an opportunity to either, you know, get some help or keep on drinking, going off to the bitter end. And I'm so grateful I chose sobriety. God's grace is sufficient. You know, I heard him finally. I was finally broken enough to get to that level of desperation to take a different action, not walking through the doors of AA. And when I did that, I finally, you know, I saw that I was not in charge. You know, I thought I had been running the show. And, you know, I guess self-will run riot. I kind of did run the show a little bit, but with me, you know, that looks like running into a brick wall, falling down, running into a brick wall, falling down over and over again, doing that same thing over and over, expecting a different result, or maybe knowing the same result was going to happen, just doing it anyway. And so my first meeting, of course, head down, picking up that white ship, but I knew something was different, and I knew I wanted something different. And I remember on the way home from that meeting, I remember exactly where I was. I will never forget it. But on the way home from that meeting, I yelled out, "Help me, God." And I, you know, I prayed before. I've always had faith. That's not an issue for me. So it was easy for me to say, "Help me, God." But to mean it like I meant it was next level. There was something different that happened in that moment. And to this day, you know, I don't want to drink. You know, I do take the action. You know, I go to meetings. I talk to other people. You know, I have a sponsor where I do the surface work, but I don't want to drink. And that is an absolute miracle. You know, that obsession has been lifted. And so what I was told is to go to meetings, get a sponsor, start working the steps, and, you know, get a service position in your home group. Start doing something, you know, when I thought of drinking, go to a meeting. When I thought of drinking, call another alcoholic. When I thought of drinking, or if I would have drank, maybe not even thinking of drinking, but if I would have been drinking, which is a lot of the time. I always like to share. I want to put, and I do, put as much time, energy, and effort into my program as I did into my drinking. Because that way, you know, I see the results. I really do. You know, if I want what I've never had, I have to do what I've never done. And that is take suggestions from other people. I knew it all. So why do I need to, even if I didn't know, I was going to tell you, yeah, I know. You know, I don't know. And I'm grateful. And the longer I stay sober, the less I know. And I'm grateful for that too. You know, God is good. And so I had people, you know, God, I see him all over the place in hindsight, you know, where he's placed different people in my life at certain times. And one of the coolest gifts was this lady, Anne Marie, who has since passed. She was the principal of my children's elementary school. And God had put her in my path for me to talk to her about the things going on in my life. And she said, Lisa, you just need to take the first step. Now, for me to talk about my life with the principal of my children's school was a big enough step and really different. But it ended up her brother was in recovery. He was in AA. But so I went to her of all people. You know, there's no coincidence with that. You know, God is, he's in the nooks and crannies if I'm looking for it. And so today, what I've been able to do is, well, what God has been able to do in my life from me taking consistent action is give me a life beyond my wildest imagination. First of all, it's a life. I didn't really have that at the end there. You know, I was just drinking. That's it. My life consisted of drinking and thinking about drinking. And that's not really a life. You know, I always like to say, Lisa, party of one. That was me. All me TV 24/7. And I thought it was fun, you know, getting drunk and listening to music at 3 a.m. while my poor kids were asleep, probably listening with me, whether they wanted to or not, you know. But it's just, I have peace in my soul today. So when I do, it's that ripple effect. It goes out to the other people in my life because I have peace within me. I can give it to you. So I seek every day for God to show me, give me somebody I can help, you know, empty me, fill me, use me, help me, God, to help you and your kids. And that looks like a life of service, you know, where my life before was all me, TV, you know, today it really is a life where I put other people before me. I think about them on a regular basis. And that is what this program has given me too, you know. Bill and Bob knew what they were doing when they said work with others. You know, that's going to help us because that gets me off me. I'm still selfish and self-seeking. I don't think that ever goes away completely, you know. But I don't think about me all the time. And that is different. You know, I really care about other people today. And, you know, that's a gift like no other. I love serving the program of Alcoholics Anonymous because I don't have any business not giving back to the program that saved my life. I just don't. I'm living on borrowed time. So, you know, what am I going to give back? And that's so important to me, especially the older I get. You know, what am I doing? What is my, you know, why am I here? And it really is to be of love and service to God and his kids. And I'm so grateful for that because that is a new me. The psychic change has happened within me. And that is a direct result of working the steps with a sponsor, working with others, and service work, you know. So today, you know, I have peace. Like I said, I have peace. I can give peace. I can work with others. I sponsor women. I've had some really cool service positions. I have not worked at the area level yet, Paola, yet. But, you know, I have served my home group in the district and I'm on committees and I need to do that. I really do because somebody was there for me. I need to show up to meetings because somebody was there for me. I heard somebody when I first got sober sharing their story. You know, in AA, we have participants and spectators. And which one do you want to be? You know, and I was a taker. I was a taker back in the day. So today I want to be a giver. What can I give? And that's just what my life looks like today. It looks way more colorful and true and real. I have a husband who loves me, children who are not afraid. They respect me so much. My husband respects the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, he knows that we're in the miracle business over here. And, you know, I have real, true friendships, deep, loving friendships, not just on the surface. And I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous and the life I have today. And thanks again for asking me to share. Love you.
Thank you, Lisa. So beautiful. Thank you so much. I love to be reminded of what I've heard from you saying, fix the woman and everything else will fall into place. Thank you for that. The way you continue to live your amends is truly inspiring. And then another thing is to put as much energy into my program as I once did into my drinking. Yeah. Wow. Participants, to be a participant versus an spectator. Thank you for that. That's awesome. Okay, so grateful for you. Now I'm going to read some announcements. The seventh tradition of AA states that every AA group should be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA members can help by contributing to your group, your local office, your area and district, and to the General Service Board. There's a great pamphlet called Self-Support, where money and spirituality mix. You can find it on AA.org. Graven does not accept direct contributions, but of course, we do have expenses. The best way to support Graven is to subscribe to the magazine, either in print, online, or on the apps. You can subscribe to the magazine in print or online by visiting agraven.org. You can subscribe to the app by searching for A Graven on the App Store on your phone. You can also purchase Graven books, greeting cards, and other items at your local AA office. By doing so, you'll be supporting both Graven and your local office. You can also visit the Graven online store at agraven.org. The AA Graven Carry the Message project allows you to help us help others by providing magazine subscriptions to those who are incarcerated, hospitalized, living in remote areas, or stuck at home. Visit agraven.org and click on Carry the Message to learn more. We invite you to listen to our other weekly podcast, the A Graven Half Hour Variety Hour, which is available for free on all podcast platforms on agraven.org. Please follow Graven on Instagram and YouTube too. The new system of our primary purpose, the official podcast of the General Service Office of Alcoholics Anonymous, launched on March 17th. Season 2 takes listeners on a journey across the fellowship, celebrating milestones, exploring how AA reaches anyone, anywhere, and share stories that highlight the impact of service, self-support, and recovery in action. Tune in to hear how AA's message continues to reach those who need it most. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite streaming platform so you can catch every episode of the upcoming season. Okay, so wonderful things, so many wonderful things. And now I get to introduce our second guest, my friend Carla White. Is a friend, a special friend I met through service. Carla, she has a real fire and passion for helping others. And you find a way to do it in so many different ways. Your work, her work in the Hispanic community is truly inspiring. And I'm grateful for you. Let's welcome Carla.
Hi, my name is Carla and I am an alcoholic. Thank you, Paola, for asking me to be here today. It's an honor and a privilege anytime that I'm asked to share at any meeting. I still get nervous to this day. I don't think that ever changes. And I think that the day that it changes, I better put myself on check. My sobriety date is 6/20/2012. So just right around the corner from Lisa, almost 14. But I'm enjoying my 13. So I started drinking fairly young as well. My drinking I think it just, it was the curiosity, the peer pressure, the wanting to fit in. And coming from a Spanish, you know, background and the culture, drinking wasn't, it wasn't a, like, it wasn't bad. It was something that everyone around us did. Especially, I don't know, we had the carne asadas, we had, you know, the piñatas, the birthday parties, and, you know, the kids turning five. Okay, let's get beer. And, you know, like that was the first thing that everybody gets is the alcohol. And you're not really celebrating the child's birthday. You're celebrating the beer, the alcohol, you know, what drink is going to be there. So I grew up, you know, that way with that kind of, you know, home environment. You know, the kid took his first steps. Oh, you know, let's have a party and drink. So we drank for, you know, anything and everything. So when I finally started drinking and I, you know, I remember like very quickly, the first time that I got, you know, drunk, I remember, you know, drinking, I always liked hard liquor versus beer. I started, you know, with hard liquor very, very quickly. But for me, it wasn't so much that it relaxed me. I mean, yes, it gave me that, you know, that drink, and there's nothing else like alcohol that when you, it goes down, it gives you that like instant gratification, you know, and you just feel you can breathe again. For me, it was also, it brought out that little monster in me that, you know, had been, you know, hiding for so long. And when I would drink, I would just become this other person. Like, it was like, I had like this whole split personality disorder thing going on, because when I would get drunk or drink, I would just become, you know, very mean. And I, you know, I would talk, you know, bad to people. I would get into arguments, fights, you know, just for no apparent reason. You know, do I owe you money? What are you looking at? What's your problem? And, you know, most of the time, nobody was even looking at me or nothing was really going on. It was just, you know, I had suppressed so many emotions for so many years that, you know, that little monster in me came out every time that I made contact with alcohol. And that's just how it was. And I didn't see my alcoholism really as a problem, because I felt that, you know, everybody drinks, everyone around me, you know, drinks. So, you know, I'm going to eventually just learn how to drink like everybody else. Alcohol just didn't seem that, I didn't think that alcohol was a real problem. I thought I was an alcoholic, but I just didn't know the actual, you know, what that actually meant. And, it's kind of hard growing up that way. And, you know, I got into all kinds of trouble. You know, part of, you know, I destroyed, you know, marriage. I left home, you know, fairly early. I didn't leave, actually. I was told to leave. I got kicked out. And I was about 19 years old, and I was just on the street running. And, you know, I didn't finish school. I stopped doing all the things that I wanted to do. And, you know, my mom had given me, she had given me a good structure and values and morals, but I just wanted to do what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. And I just didn't want to have any authority. I had no respect for authority or anyone for that matter. And I lived my life for that, like that, for a lot of years. You know, fast forward a little, I get pregnant. I, typical Spanish, you know, Latino couple. Now you're pregnant, you have to get married. You know, doesn't matter if you love each other or not. You know, how are you going to have a child without being married? So, you know, I got married. I didn't love my partner anymore. We didn't love each other. We just got married because what are they going to say about you now that you're pregnant? You know, 20 years, you know, 19 years old, pregnant, like 20 years old, pregnant, had my child at 21. And my marriage was, it started bad. It ended bad. We divorced. And I remember leaving my son with my mom when he was about, 3 years old. And I didn't come back, and, you know, for him until he was 11. And you fast forward that time, I had another child in between. And I visited jails and institutions for a very long time, but I really didn't think it had anything to do with my alcoholism at all. You know what I mean? I thought it was every other problem in the world. And the reason I say that is because anytime that I got arrested, I didn't get arrested for DUI. I had met too many women incarcerated that had those issues. So I didn't drive when I was intoxicated. So I was a smart, responsible alcoholic. But I had other issues. You know, I was getting arrested for assault. I was getting arrested for, assault on an ex-cohabitant spouse, assault with a deadly weapon. So my issues were violent. So I didn't think that, that's your alcoholic thinking. You don't put the two together, and it's that insanity that our literature talks about, Lisa, she touched on it a little bit, the doing something over and over again and expecting a different result. I would go in and out of jail. But every time I would get out, I would just, start exactly where I left off. And it didn't matter how long I went to jail for. I could be in 9 months and have been dry for 9 months. But as soon as I would get out, the first thing was, the bottle and a pack of cigarettes. And I was off running again. The difference was that, things would get worse so much faster each time. And those, lapses would be so much shorter. Now I can see that. It wasn't until on one of my last blackouts, I hit my mom because I'm that type of drunk and I put hands on my mom that I came to the realization that I could no longer drink. That was like my first surrender in the program. And, my mom is my Eskimo because had it not been my mom, it would have not mattered. I had hit other people in my in my alcoholism, a lot of other people, but because it was my mom, it just, it did something, it changed me. And I had no recollection of hitting her, which was the worst part. And my mom was like my ride or die. My mom, everybody else in my family had like closed the door on me. I was not welcomed, but my mom was always like, if I called my mom, she was there. Like my mom never, said, I don't, that she said, like, that's my daughter. My mom went as far. I always say that I went as far as stealing her faith from her because my mom used to go to church and whatnot. And I went as far as stealing her faith because it got to a point with her, church sisters, whatever you want to call it, whatever faith. And they told her, oh, you're always, crying for your daughter, but you need to just give her to God. And my mom walked away from her faith because she said that she would never just give me to God. Like I was her child and, she never went back to her faith. I even stole that from her. So when I hit my mom, I made a decision that I needed help. And I don't know, it was fear part of it because I don't remember doing it. Another one was guilt, because how could I have hurt, the one person that I said that I love the most. And, third, I turned into my father, because my father was an abusive husband. So, it was all of these things all at once. I wish I could say that I woke up the next day and I went to a residential or I went to a rehab, but it didn't work out that way. I went to go see someone in the professional field for, he was an alcohol and drug counselor. And he said that I had to wait 30 days for a bed. And I didn't know how to wait 30 days. I needed to go to rehab then. I needed to go somewhere then, because I was at that point where I didn't know how to cope. And I had to go out one more time and drink. And that was a mess, obviously. But I did that. And I remember like in that, drunken episode, I remember I called that gentleman and I said, of course, typical alcoholic, it's all your fault that I'm drinking again because you didn't put me in rehab. And I asked for help and you didn't put me, in a rehab, even though you suggested that I go to AA meetings and get a sponsor. But, we've sometimes in the program, we think that the general public knows what that looks like, you know, what AA meetings look like. And I didn't know what an AA meeting looked like. I had never been to one. You know what I mean? Like people just assume what I thought AA was what I had seen on TV. You know, I had seen that movie, like Flight, I think at the time or something, or I think there was another movie. And I mean, that's what I thought AA was. And I was like, how am I going to talk about alcohol? And that's going to keep me away from alcohol. It doesn't make any sense. So, you know, fast forward, I ended up going to a residential home with all women, which was the best thing that I could have ever done. And I really got to, you know, work on self at that residential, you know, rehab. It was far away from where I lived. And it was the hardest decision I ever made. But, you know, I couldn't have walked in just to a meeting and sat down. And I really needed to be, you know, put away for a while. I needed to acquire, you know, even if it was just a little bit of time, but I needed that structure. I needed that rigidness. And at that place where I went, it was tough, you know, because you had to do step one, two, and three. You had to get a sponsor. We had to read the big book. I thought the big book was so boring at the beginning. I was like, oh my God, like this is, you know, because I was looking at the differences and I was like, I just can't even understand this book. It's just, you know, and I had those kinds of like really rigid sponsors at the beginning. Like you have to do a gratitude list. And I had to do a gratitude list, I think for like the first like 2 years almost of my recovery. And I had to do the steps in my first year of recovery. And I had to, you know what I mean? It wasn't like, to me, it wasn't like, maybe you should, or I suggest you do. To me, it was, I had to, because I had investigated enough that resentments were was going to take me out, and I didn't want to go out and drink. I was so fearful of going out and drinking, so I was thirsty to do that inventory, because I was scared that if I didn't do that inventory and if I didn't get rid of some of those resentments and some of those dark secrets, I was eventually just going to go out of the rooms again. So for myself, there wasn't any waiting. And I'm glad that I met a woman that took me through the steps and took me, you know, through that process. And I was able to heal, because if you're not doing the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous, then you're just, I'd say you're just visiting the alcoholics. You're not working on self. And this is a program of action. So in order for you to really heal in this program and have some, you know, recovery, there needs to be that psychic change, you know, that talks about in the spiritual experience. And the only way we get that is through the steps of, you know, through the steps and working on self. I stayed in the English groups for a while, and then I discovered Spanish groups, and I felt home, you know, I mean, I identified better. You know, whether, you know, we like to talk about it or not, it was just those cultural differences that we find in the Spanish sharing. Like I said, when I would talk about piñatas and, you know, soccer games, and I would share that, like, you know, some people would be like, huh? I'm not talking about the Super Bowl. I'm talking about like FIFA soccer. So, and, you know, the carne asada is like, it was just, and then when I went to my first Spanish meeting, I felt home. And you know, when I went to the Spanish groups and I saw the lack of women also, that kind of also, you know, I don't know. It was, you know, maybe at the beginning, I didn't see like the red flags, but afterwards it was like, why aren't there any women here? And early on in my recovery, you know, I learned real quick that, you know, there was a lack of Spanish women in the Spanish groups, but, I decided to stay because I know that when I got to the Spanish groups, there weren't any women, you know, that many women. So I made a commitment to stay in the Spanish groups, because if none of us Spanish women stay in the Spanish groups and get any significant recovery, then who's going to receive the other women that come? You know what I mean? Because it's kind of like that vicious cycle that there's never enough women that stay. I could have easily gone to an English group, but I didn't. Service has been a huge part of my recovery. You know, I'm, you know, I didn't start doing service because I wanted to really, I started doing service because I wanted to be a part of AA. And I just wanted to be in the middle of AA. And I just started raising my hand. And, you know, because I know, you know, my alcoholic thinking. And if I'm doing something else for someone else, or if I'm just busy and I have a commitment in AA, then I stay away from that first drink. And it doesn't matter, you know, if you're new, if you're old, you know, if you stay home or if you're not doing anything for someone else, you know, that alcohol, those isms start, you know what I mean? And those isms nowadays are, you know, I mean, they come in all different ways, shapes and forms. So I started doing service very early on, and I just stay in service. You know what I mean? Anything that I can do, you know, sometimes it could be, you know, on a committee. Other times it could be in your inner group office. And other times it could just be sponsorship, plain sponsorship. And I have found that, you know, the most satisfying service that I've found in Alcoholics Anonymous is sponsorship, you know, being able to give to someone else what was given to me so freely. And being able to share, you know, that that experience with others, and being able to leave a legacy to other women and others so that they can leave that legacy to others. I don't know. It's just, it trickles down. In Alcoholics Anonymous, I've watched my kids grow. Both of my kids graduated high school. I graduated high school. I got a diploma. Recently, I went back to school. I'm studying graphic design. And you get to do all of these things that you didn't think you were able to do. And Alcoholics Anonymous provides you that. I haven't, you know, I used to go in and out of jail. I'm a statistic, but I haven't visited jail since I got here to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what I mean? I don't have to live that way no more. And I think that that's one of the amazing things about our program, is, you know, if you want what we have, then there's just a few things that you have to do. And that's what I had to do. And I'm going to finish with this, you know, because I always get a kick out of it. When I was early, you know, when my kids were young and they were going, you know, and they were like, I think they were in elementary or so. I thought it was the funniest thing ever, you know, because they were in grade school. And I remember someone said, oh, you know, do you want to be the PTA such and such? And I said, I didn't know what that was. You know what I mean? My mom never did PTA. And I said, sure. So I did PTA and I did the PTA president. I said, oh, we're just probably going to bake cookies or something. No, I became the PTA president and then the treasurer and then the secretary. So being of service is not just in AA. We're of service anywhere that we go, you know, and it's baffling because before I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was never willing to do anything for anyone else without getting something in return. And that has changed. That mentality changes. So I thought it was so funny because when I would sit next to all of these PTA moms, I was thinking to myself, if they only knew that I had like two felonies and all of this other stuff, but I used to get such a kick out of it. But Alcoholics Anonymous makes, you know, like, I guess makes us into good people, period. You know, and that's just what it is. You know what I mean? We don't have to be perfect and we don't have to be white like the snow, but we get to grow. And, you know, I'm always willing to grow. And, you know, some days I have to put extra water because, you know, my growing gets stagnant, but, just grow, you know, I mean, sometimes, you know, that's just what it is. We grow in Alcoholics Anonymous and it's all about our spiritual maintenance, you know, the way that, you know, you carry your program. So I hope that that helps someone. And, you know, thank you again, Paola, for asking me to share. And thank you, Lisa, for your share as well.
Thank you, Carla. Wow. I want to say that Carla has been published in La Viña. And I'm thrilled to know more about you, your reflections about the Hispanic culture and the perspective you share was just so great. Thank you for that. And I think you have a story in a sponsorship in La Viña. So in Spanish, that is really powerful. Thank you so much. Thank you both so much. And please let your friends know about our meeting. This is an open meeting, so it is also ideal for friends who want to learn more about Alcoholics Anonymous. Keep this in mind when doing cooperation with a professional community or public information work. And now I would like to invite Lisa to close the meeting with a prayer of your choice. Thank you, God, so much for this meeting, for your wonderful shares.
Thank you, Paola. And thank you so much, Carla, for your work story. It was incredible. Thank you. What a gift we have today. All right. So let's close out with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you.